I'm Georgie Crawford. You're listening to the Good Glow podcast. Throughout my treatment for breast cancer, I've realised the importance of self-care. Whether that's a 5K run, a checkup with your GP, or even a 5-minute dip in the sea, the time has come for us to put ourselves higher on our own to-do list. This season, I've teamed up with Spotlight Oral Care. I know how important oral care is to our overall health and how we really need to look after our teeth and gums by using the best products. I've been using the Spotlight Oral Care Sonic Toothbrush and I love that it gives me that dentist clean feeling and is much more effective than a manual brush and less abrasive. Use the discount code GOODGLOW25 on spotlightoralcare.com to get 25% off the entire range. Why not pick up some perfect stocking fillers this Christmas and get them delivered straight to your front door? This week on the Good Glow podcast, I speak to Brian Dowling. Host of Death Becomes Him, Brian has opened his heart after the death of his mum, who was also his best friend. Brian was in LA when he found out his mum had passed away and had to make the long trip home. He was in complete shock, but has slowly processed what happened and decided to start a podcast about grief. Today, we take a trip down memory lane to his big brother days, speak about the friends who've been his rocks over the last couple of years, and we speak about our next chapters, how we are both ready to expand our families. We speak about surrogacy and adoption and our hopes for the future. I hope you enjoy. Brian Dowling, welcome to the Good Glow podcast.
I'm very excited to be here.
I waited so long to say that. Can I just say that I am the biggest Big Brother fan on the whole planet, and I just thought ultimate Big Brother contestant.
Yes, and that's official. I am the ultimate Big Brother contestant. When I'd done the first time in 2001, that it will be, so it's 19 and a half years.
Oh my God.
Big anniversary next year, 20 years. And I'm thinking, as the winner, maybe I should organise something with people, if we're allowed travel, obviously. That'll be next July. And then it was 10 years in September from winning ultimate. That one to me doesn't seem like 10 years.
No.
If someone said to me, it feels like 5. But even the first time, does not feel like 19 and a half years. I was a different person. I turned 23 on the show. So that feels like 10 years. And I'm laughing because you go, shit, how has it been that length of time? And also to win it a second time and to still have a career and be working. It's very bizarre that I was running around a house screaming naked for 9 weeks. Basically what I did. That's what I did. You know, to have the opportunities and then to be on it again and then to work on the show, and that soured a bit. But to have those opportunities, you know, to still be able to stand up and talk about it, it's weird.
And did you feel like going into that Ultimate Big Brother series that you were going to win it?
No. Honestly, because Jade, bless her, I should say Jade Rester, not bless her, had gone back in. And I remember I was very fearful, you know, what had happened to Jade, in a sense of, I thought, sugar, when you have that kind of success from the show and then you kind of go back in, will people go, oh, I don't like him anymore? And I remember I was a bit like, and then I got good money and I was like, okay, we're going to do it. But also I knew it was an opportunity for people to kind of see me again in that sense. And I hadn't really changed really in the 9 years at all. I was still the same person. I was more wary, though, that it was a television show than when I was the first time. I was kind of aware it was a set. Mm. I knew they were making a television show. But apart from that, what I want people to know is when you're in there, you forget there are cameras. You honestly do. And that's what's so unique and clever about Big Brother is they make you feel somewhat comfortable in your surroundings. But I'm a people person. I enjoyed going from housemate to housemate. You know, Coolio, the rapper. You know, John McCurrick, the racing pundit, you know, Ulrika Johnson, Chantel and Preston had this high profile relationship. And I'm sharing a bed with Nikki Graham. And then Nadia, who was my favourite Big Brother contestant ever, Makosi. And the whole thing with her and Anthony in the pool, and she's talking about it. And I'm like, did you do it? Did you have sex in the pool? It was just, it was amazing for me. And then to be there with Nikki Graham, the last two. And it's so funny to have that actually quite mirrored myself in Helen. It was very strange, you know, and you never think you're going to be that person because you never think you're going to be lucky enough. And you always think, I always think, well, someone else deserves it more. I had already won before.
Yeah.
You know, and to make it to the final two, people are going to remember you anyway. And I thought Nikki had such a great story in life and everything she battled with. And she's very, very funny. You know, it was weird watching her telly and then living with her. Because mm-hmm. when you see someone have an episode or go wild, it's funny to watch. When you're living there, you're a bit like, oh, you can stop now. And then it doesn't stop. It's weird, but...
And she's just like that, is she?
She's just like that. That's what she's like. And, you know, her and I've not seen her in such a long time, but I'll always, even if I'm not in their lives or anyone that I was on the shows with, and sadly I'm not for whatever reason, you know, it's happened, but I'll always, those people will always mean something to me because I think we all shared such an experience together.
Would you be able to do something like that now, do you think?
I get offered, sounds arrogant, but I've been offered reality shows and I get, you know, to do reality stuff because that's kind of what I'm known for. The last reality show, what was Big Brother in 2010, and then it was Dancing with the Stars. And I always feel with Dancing with the Stars, it's not really a reality show because you're learning, you know, to do something, but it kind of is a reality show. But probably the only one that I think I would do probably would be I'm a Celebrity, I think.
Yeah, you'd be brilliant.
But no. I think the reason I might be brilliant is because I'd be constantly screaming and terrified. So I feel like I'd be that one person that people would probably vote for. Oh yeah, put him in the coffin full of snakes, or make him, you know, the kangaroo penis. That'd be really funny.
That's what
watch.
We want to see, Brian.
I know. So I mean, that's the only one. You know, maybe in a few years when I'm hitting 50. I'll do something like that.
And you went from Dancing with the Stars at the start of this year to COVID and being surrounded by all of these people, making friends, getting out in front of a live audience every Sunday, to what we're all going through now.
I know.
How have you found that?
It was very strange because I was living in America. I moved over in November and I was due to go back in April, and it's like October and I'm still here. So we were on the show and we were getting ready. I left week 7. So we're getting ready at week 10 or 11 to kind of get ready to go back for the final and perform. And then they moved the final forward and then we weren't able to go back. There was no final of the show. I was in with Grainne Gallagher, who was on the show with me, and we kind of quarantined in an apartment that RT got for us in town, in Capel Street. And we were there, I think, for 2 weeks, kind of wondering what was going on. And then that was weird. It was weird seeing Dublin City because, you know, the show goes out over Christmas and January. It was weird seeing the city so quiet. Mm. And Grainne and I would kind of go for walks and be like, feels like it's Christmas Day and, you know, no one's told us. That was very eerie. And then what was really good, though, was being able to go home and spend time with my family. Something that I've not done in such a long time. Now, look, that was in March and it's still October. I was like, OK, and we need a time out. But it's been quite nice, you know, because I was away for so long and I lived in London for so long. It's quite nice to be back home, you know, with my family, watching my nephew grow up, who I'm obsessed with. So that's been nice. And also for Arthur and I to be in the one place together.
Yeah. Because is this the longest you've been?
This is the longest, yes. Because, you know, last year I done 12 or 13 long haul flights from LA back to Ireland and the UK for work. And that's a lot. That flight's 11 hours. So there's an 8-hour time difference. You know, I'm lucky enough that I can do it. And, you know, that was great. But I was tired. And then I'd committed to doing Dancing with the Stars. They got me... I say to Larry Bass at Shinnewell, you wore me down in year 4. I was like, okay. And I was like, you know, I'm ready for a challenge. But that was also very emotional because I'm obsessed with Christmas. It's my favorite time of the year. My mom's birthday is the 10th of December. Her anniversary is in February. So that, like, I think there wasn't probably a show that I didn't cry on. Mm-hmm. I was so emotional on that show. But I always think when you're given a challenge or an opportunity, when I turned 40 and we lost mom, I said I was going to push myself more. And stuff that I cowered away from, you know, like Fittest Family, we'd done a Christmas special. I kind of thought, yeah, push myself. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah.
You know, and that was really good. And being back at home with Arthur and I has been really good in seeing each other. But now I was like to him, yeah, maybe just a week or two, just a week or two.
And this is probably the worst time for him to be kind of assessing if he wants to live in Ireland, because he can't go anywhere.
Can't go anywhere. You know, Arthur's, you know, is independent. He's a creative director, choreographer. You know, he's so successful in what he does. But we've been very lucky. We've both been able to travel with work. And I think that was the thing about living in America, was we could still jump on a plane anywhere. And he rang me and I was off the show, and it was like, he was supposed to come over and he couldn't come over. And then he'd castings working with Puma in London. They were all cancelled. And they said to me in March, you know, I think we should just move back. And I'm like, well, yeah, we're moving back in, you know, October 2021. He was like, no, I think I'm just going to move back now. And I was like, let's do it. That was easy for me because I was here. He'd done everything. He packed up our home, furniture. He shipped it all. Like, he didn't physically ship it. He organized a ship to ship it over. He'd done everything. And then he went into kind of lockdown over there with Donal.
Yeah.
Our friend Donal and Sophie and their two boys. He was with them for a month. He helped them pack up. And then flights were cancelled twice. They came back. And then he went into quarantine with Donal for 2 weeks.
Yes, yeah, so your friendship with Donal Skeen, I'm fascinated. Yeah. I need a reality show to follow this.
Well, we've just done a live with Donal and I'm not sure we couldn't even work the feckin' hob. And Donal's like, Jesus Christ, we're making red pesto chicken or something.
Were you friends with him before, LA?
Yes, I met Donal in 2008. We were both cast in the same panto.
Okay.
I was Captain Hook and Donal was Peter Pan. I didn't know who Donal was, of course. He didn't know me. And then we just got on so well. And Panto's very intense.
Mm.
You're doing like 63, 64 shows. You have a 3 week rehearsal period. You know, you're sharing changing rooms with people. People are seeing you getting changed and doing all of that at your highs, your lows, everything. So we've been friends for 12 years. And then he moved to Los Angeles. And then when we were moving over, I didn't even really know where Donal was living at the time. I knew he was living somewhere. And we literally, the place we got was 5 minutes in a car from Donal's.
Wow.
Yeah, and then Donal kind of showed us around LA, and it was quite great that when Donal would travel for work, which he did a lot, I'd hang out with Sophie. So we were able to kind of help each other through it.
Oh, it's like family in LA.
Really, and I think when you're over there, and I can't drive, so I really no way of getting around apart from Uber. So it was quite nice having people that were also Irish, that also knew me, but knew me not from LA. Because we were difficult, because I kind of felt when I was over there, I didn't really have an identity, you know, because I was kind of hanging out with a lot of Arthur and his friends, you know, but they're his friends. I'm super independent. I've always been independent. And I feel like when I was over there, I didn't really have my own independence or identity in a sense, because I had so much, I don't want to say freedom, but in London and the UK and in Ireland, I had so much freedom. But when I was, because I went to America for my husband, he moved over there for work, and that's what you do. So I just felt a bit like, yeah, it was strange. Arthur was obsessed with America. He loves America.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know if we'll ever get a chance to go back. We're on the visas for another year. But at the moment, you can't fly anywhere.
No. And yeah. Do you miss it?
I don't miss it. I'm a home bird. I like being around my family. Even though I lived in the UK, they're only an hour away on a plane.
Mm.
I don't miss. What I do miss is the pool. I miss those silly things of being able to go to the pool, maybe, and lie down. Right? I know that sounds so bizarre, but that was the norm. That was so strange. I kind of miss that. But no, I like being closer to family. You know, when we lost mom, I was in America. I got that dreaded phone call. And I think that probably for the whole time I was in America, I think I was very fearful of that phone ringing again.
Mm.
I think that's what it was. It's probably fear. And then now that I'm back home, my family, I think there's just a bit like, okay, and now that Arthur's with me and we're planning on living here forever. And that's kind of nice at 42 to kind of know where my forever home's going to be, because I've never really had that before.
Yeah. And it's nice, that feeling of being settled. And I was thinking of you when I was driving in today, because when I found my lump in my breast, I found the lump and I knew my life would never be the same again. Sometimes I'll never get over the shock of it, you know, that shock. So who rang you about your mum when you were in LA?
I was in Donald's house. And Arthur was away. I always laugh when I say this. Arthur was doing Armenian Eurovision. He was created. I don't know why. I think it's the gayest thing ever. But Arthur was in Armenia doing Eurovision. Donal was in London. Donal was in our place in London. And Sophie was away. So I was in the house and I had to look after Max, their dog. And there was going to be like a 7 or 10 day period. I was going to be on my own. And I had an American agent and I was kind of excited to be in America on my own, like after the dog, you know, do see the agent, go to Starbucks, do all that. Yeah, and I'd literally got there the first day. I went to bed that night, got up the next day, was so tired. I was on the phone to my mom and I had the dog. And I went to bed about, what time was it? It was actually 3 o'clock in the day and it was 11 o'clock and I was on the phone to mom and mom was on Snapchat and she was messaging me and I said, she goes, good night, son. She stops calling me son. And she said, I'll speak to you tomorrow. I said, I'll speak to you tomorrow. And I went to bed about 9 o'clock because I was so tired. And my phone was ringing at midnight. So it'd be 8 o'clock in the morning. And it was my sister, Michelle, ringing me. And it wouldn't be, I just thought, oh, Michelle, go away. You know, I'm in LA. It's tired. And I ignored it. And then Pippa had sent me a message from my story. and I was drinking champagne in a wine glass, but I don't drink wine. And Pip was like, are you actually drinking wine? And I was replying, going, well, no, I couldn't find a champagne glass. So like, blah, blah. And then my sister Tracy had called me and she called me not on Viber, on her phone. And I thought, why would Tracy be calling me on her phone knowing I'm in LA? She wouldn't, she'd be too expensive.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what I was just thinking. And bearing in mind, it was dark in the room. I didn't even know where the lights were. And then they were just like, we can't wake mam. And I was like, what do you mean you can't wake mam? And I kind of sat up going, oh my God, put her on the phone. I was with, I was chatting to her a few hours ago. What are you on about? And then I still don't remember much of it. But then I remember being in Donald's kind of living room area and it was so dark. And then no one called me. And then I called all my sisters. I have six sisters and none of their phones were kind of picking up. And then my sister said to me, oh, they're just going to work on her for a few more minutes. And I suppose thought, well, that's going to be fine. They're going to work on her for a few minutes. So can we all calm down? Then I remember sitting on the sofa. I remember just feeling a bit weird and feeling really cold and just not feeling like, just felt really weird. And then I went, I'm actually kind of on my own and it's dark. And then again, no one was ringing. And I thought, what the fuck is going on? Jeez, pick up your phone. And then I rang my sister's phone and her husband picked up. And I said, David, I said, is mom okay? He was like, oh, I think maybe you should just speak to one of your sisters. And I said, I'm going to ask you a stupid question. I said, and I know this is ridiculous. I said, is my mother dead?
Oh my God.
And he said to me, yeah, she is. And I was like, it's so strange because I almost thought, and it's only, you know, when you talk about you, yeah, kind of, you kind of relive it. I almost thought in that second, I kind of thought, well, how is she dead? It just, it didn't make sense. And I'm on my own and I probably never said this before, but I felt so alone.
Yeah.
And I felt so vulnerable. And I almost felt a bit like that no one cared about me in that moment because it was just me in this house on my own with no friends, no husband, no family. And I remember ringing, I rang Pippa. She didn't pick up. I'd rang Simon, my best friend Simon. He obviously didn't pick up. And it's funny, they actually thought, I was out. Yeah. On a night out with the time difference. And Pippa was doing the school run. You know, Simon works in PR. He was at a shoot. And then I called my friend Leanne. And I was just wailing on the phone to her. And she was like, oh my God, no, she can't be.
Mm.
I was like, no, she is. And I was very specific in what I said. And it's a word that I struggled with. My mother's dead. So when I rang, Pippa, she goes, hi, how are you? My mother's dead. When I rang Simon, oh, how are you? Oh, my mother's dead. I was just... those were the words, those three words, my mother's dead. That's all. And then it was, you're trying to get out of the country as quick as you can. So then I was trying to get on a plane, but my friend Leanne works for Aer Lingus. So she organized all that for me. And it was the same crew that had brought me over, that brought me back. She told one of the girls and she said, what do you want? And I'm not a rude person. I just said, I just want no one to talk to me. I just want to be left alone. And she said, yeah, not a problem. And then I found out that she had also lost her mother. Before then, Leanne had also told me. And it was just, I suppose it's just shock. And when I chatted with Lottie Ryan for Death Becomes, it was Lottie that said to me that shock is a really good thing. That shock helps you get through.
Really?
Yeah, shock. Shock makes you do the stuff you wouldn't normally do.
Mm.
Because normally, you know, when you're fearful, and maybe you've been in that position with your diagnosis, that when you're in shock, shock is what makes you get off your ass and do the stuff. It was shock that made me shower and brush my teeth and get ready for the funeral. You know,
and when you were going to the airport, did you feel like you were like on the outside looking at your life? Like, how were you functioning?
I wasn't functioning. I was just need to pack. And then I remember I couldn't cry. And I remember putting on Alexa to play sad songs.
Did you?
And I just couldn't. There was just no emotion. My nails started to turn blue because I was so cold. And I remember thinking, God, maybe I'm going into shock. I remember standing looking in the mirror going, I think you're going into shock. Are you going into shock? Are you going into shock? Oh my God, you're laughing. You're laughing at yourself. Oh my God, you're going mad. Stupid stuff. It was so weird. And I remember kept bringing the dog for a walk and actually having the dog as a distraction was actually a blessing.
Mm.
Because if I didn't have that dog, I could have reached for a bottle of vodka or a bottle of something, you know? And I don't know. And then I just got myself on the plane, got to Dublin, My friends met me at the airport, and that was a real realization that it was actually true.
That drive home.
Yeah, it was that. And then it was knowing that when I would go in, that I would have to see my sisters, and I remember them opening the car, and, like, you know, I am the eldest, I'm the only boy, and I'm one of seven. And I remember that was the hardest thing, was having to get out of the car and to hug my sisters. And I remember my legs went from underneath me, because it was a real realization that I was coming into my house. It was the last time that I'd see my mom, and that she'd be there. And that was a real gut-wrenching moment. And it was also for my sisters, for them to know that I was home, I think made it very real. And that I was the last piece of the jigsaw, because I'm one of seven. And that was a real tough thing. And I also felt like I let them down, that I wasn't there when they needed me, you know. And that was a hard thing. And I've got my head around that, because my mom raised us to be independent. Our mom, I kept saying my mom raised us that we could, you know, fly the nest and come back. And that was a real tough one, that I felt like I'd let them down. And then I was angry and I was hurt. But it's been 2.5 years, and you get your head around all of that, you know. But it's just sad. It's
heartbreaking. Like, my mum is my best friend. I ring her a million times a day, and I never take it for granted, because, you know, I've interviewed Pippa on my podcast as well, and I've the heartbreak that she went through and losing a best friend. I just can't even imagine it. It doesn't get easier, does it? You just learn how to
I don't think cope. It gets easier, because I used to always say that, you know, it's how does it work? How am I supposed to feel now? It's been a year, it's been a year and a half. Tell me what to do. But no one can tell you what to do. No one can tell you how to grieve. It's like you kind of, we forever miss her, and we talk about her constantly. Like, it was only yesterday I was in her room, my dad's room, and with my sister Tara, and she's the youngest, and she found mom and tried to resuscitate her and do all of that. And, you know, I'll always commend her for that. And she's only 26, and she's Harvey's mom. And we went through her clothes, and both of us cried. And I'd not done that in such a long time. It gets easier to deal with, I think. But the feeling of loss is still the same, but you just know how to deal with it. You know how to act, you know. And I think I'm surrounded by such good people. I've got a great husband, great friends, that when I would be going a bit cuckoo, or, you know, my friends are very good at sitting me down and saying, this is not who you are as a person, you know.
And you have such amazing friends. Like, did Pippa help you, you know, by just acknowledging what you were going through?
She, yeah, and so good. And I remember Pippa at a fashion factory on the day of my mom's funeral, and she was like, I'm just gonna have to cancel the family. I was like, she will do no such thing. No, you go out there and you know you do your thing. And Brian and Susanna, her husband and Susanna, her sister, were at the funeral. And then afterwards, she came to where we were in Newbridge at the KDN, and she drove myself and Arthur to the takeaway in Rathangan in Sorrento, and we all got chips, and she dropped us home. And I think having such a close friend who's also gone through it is a real help. Because I'd said to Pippa when she was going through it, and I would say, God, I'm so sorry. But then you walk away and you go, I don't really know what she's feeling. And then when it happened, it was like, shit, that's the feeling, you know. And I've got more than one friend, my friend Nadia Ford, she's also, you know, lost her mom. And it was like, and I remember my last conversation about death and loss was with Nadia. We were in Blackpool together, and she just told me she was pregnant, and no one else knew. And people were getting her drinks, and I was drinking her drink as well as mine. I was like, I'll
come up. What a great friend.
People won't know you're pregnant. And then we talked about, and she talked on the train. I was eating a pasty. I keep going, pasties, a pasty. She was feeling sick, and she was telling about her mom and the loss. And I said, my God, how do you? And then it was like a few days later, she was at my mom's funeral.
Oh my God.
How it all happened and everything is, you know. But I've got such a great support network. And Arthur lost his dad when he was 16. And, you know, and even at that wasn't something Arthur and I really ever spoke about. Really, it just wasn't. It was something Arthur didn't talk about. We talk about it sometimes. And it was only after losing mom, I had so many questions for him, and, you know, and what to do. But I think what was also very weird, that I wasn't going to let the loss of my mom define me. It was how I recovered from the situation. I used to always think that would define me as a person. But my mother was private. She was proud, but she believed in family and unity, and that you do everything together. And she always believed in us saying please and thank you and not judging people. You know, and they're the things now that's the person that I want to be, I want to make her proud and I want to make the right decisions for her. Mm-hmm. But also I've met other stuff, you know, in the industry that we're in, it's so fickle, you know, it's so fake. And since losing mom, now it's kind of made me prioritize stuff in my life, as in who are the people now really I want to make efforts for? Who are the people I really want to go for a drink with? But also with work stuff, it's like, no, that's just not for me, or I'll pass on that or any opportunity. Whereas before I was a bit of a people pleaser.
Yeah.
Because I'm one of seven. It's probably, people probably look at me and go, oh, so spoiled. I'm spoiled to a certain extent, but I'm also a people pleaser. I like to be able to keep people happy. I don't like confrontation. I don't like to rock the boat, you know? But I think with mom not around now, I kind of know where she wants me to go. And I honestly believe the reason we're back here and everything, back living in Ireland, and I just think mom would be happy knowing. I mean, I'm back living in my home with my husband in my childhood bedroom.
Oh my God.
You know, how it's come full circle.
Yeah.
It's so weird considering everything I've done, and for mom not to be here. That's bittersweet. That's tough.
Mm.
But you just have to get out of bed and you just have to keep going with it. You do.
I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute, but first, I wanted to give you an update on my Sonic toothbrush. Great teeth start with Spotlight Oral Care's Sonic toothbrush, the oral care staple. Designed with both efficiency and comfort in mind, it ensures an amazing clean, as it is gentle and effective in removing plaque and discoloration, even for sensitive teeth. The 2-minute timer and high frequency brush movement, along with 3 speed settings for personalized cleaning, sensitive, clean, and white, will improve your long-term oral health. With a travel case and personalization options available, it's the ideal gift for you or a loved one this Christmas. Check out spotlightoralcare.com for more. Now, back to my conversation.
And your podcast has helped so many people. And it's also, I haven't lost a parent, but it's great to know, to listen to a podcast like that and understand and, you know what to say to people and, you know, hear all different stories. Do you find sometimes, though, that your podcast is triggering?
Yes. I was, when I started, well, first of all, we came up with the idea, myself, Arthur and Donald, were in Donald's kitchen in, it was Easter of 2018, and we just lost mom. I keep saying lost mom, it's so stupid. It's like people say to me, like, I left her in a shop. It's like, you know, when we lost mom, these are just the words that I use. And it was Easter, and Donald said, I think when you talk about your mom, I see a vulnerability in you. He goes, and it's such a shame that people don't talk about it. And I say, well, they probably don't because they're probably embarrassed and there's no way I'm going to be this vulnerable. I was like, nah, not happening. And then he was like, I think it'd be a great podcast, Death Becomes Him. And we thought about the name because of the movie and all of that. And it was, I thought it was so camp. And then Donald and Arthur were on me. Like when Arthur and Donald, they're very alike. So once they get an idea, it just hammered to you. Donald was like, when you do, when you do, when you do. I was like, fuck off, leave me alone. And then when I done Dancing with Stars, I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. And they were like, yeah, okay, yeah, okay. And then it was Donald who had done this podcast, who got to meet Cassie. And he was like, I've got the perfect person. I was like, all right, okay. And then I remember Donald reached out initially to Cassie because I was like, oh, I'm not really, because I was thinking, I'm not really sure I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
But in a way, it was kind of done for me by Donald and by Arthur. And then I was over here and then I'd asked Pippa to do it. She said, yeah. Nadia said she'd do it. Arthur said you do it. I knew I had my sisters because we wanted to do 7 eps because 7 is our favorite number. And then the first one I'd done with Arthur, and I listened back to it, I'm going, Arthur didn't get a word in because that was just me babbling on, right? And then I got a bit better with Pippa. It was when I sat down with Nadia and listened to the Nadia one back, I thought, oh my God, actually, I think we have something here. But I would leave that and do Dancing with the Stars rehearsal at the same time. And I'd go into Laura, my partner, and be like, an emotional wreck. You know, I was just so, and it was still very raw. It's a mom's birthday, it's Christmas. You know, you're heightened around that time. But honestly, doing the first one was like therapy. And I say all the time, talking is therapy. I fully believe that. But I found it so relatable to be around people who had gone through what I had gone through. But also to hear Nicky Byrne talk about his story, being on the plane, and for him to be so honest about it and picking out the coffins. And I went, okay, we thought that was funny. And to share the humor.
Yeah.
It's okay to share humor. It's okay to laugh about it. It's okay to have those moments where I didn't think my mom had any legs. I don't know why. I don't, you know, it's okay to say all, because you're all sharing it. And I think we all turn to humor. But it was quite nice to be around people that had gone through the same thing. Mm. But it was emotional. Even the second season I've done, actually recorded the last one today. And that was a tough one. That was it was about suicide. We'd not talked about suicide on the podcast before, and that was tough. But to see other people going through their grief, but to see how they still have fight in them,
yeah,
and they still have a zest for life in them, it's to kind of feed off that. But also they give me advice, you know, and I can give them advice. And that there really is, I don't believe there's a right, well, there is a really wrong way to grieve, of course, but there's no right or wrong way to grieve. And I think no one should tell you how to grieve. And what works for you may not work for me.
Mm-hmm.
What works for Arthur or Nadia may not work for me. It's finding your own path, but also don't be afraid to ask for help. I think I was a bit afraid initially at the start. I think I was a bit shameful of, like, everything's fine, but I'm not really fine. I'm crying every day, or, you know, I'm doing this and I shouldn't be doing that. So it's, but that's okay. It's part of it.
Yeah. And we both had Rachel Gorry on our podcast.
Yes.
And I loved your interview with her, because I felt like because you'd been through grief and you'd lived it, you were able to ask her questions that maybe somebody else wouldn't have the nerve to.
Yes.
So I loved that interview. I thought it was amazing. And to watch her get up with her kids and face the world every day, I don't know how she does it.
You know, and he was 29 and she's such a young woman herself. And they have three really young children. You know, and I reached out to her again via DM. Like, what I do is really bizarre. Like, I'm messaging random people that I've never, not random people I've never met before. Mm-hmm. I'm like, hi, I'm Brian Dowling. I do a podcast. Like,
they're like, we know.
Yeah, but I copy and paste so everyone gets the same message. And at the road, that's the message he sent me. But I thought Rachel's story, because I wanted to come back with season two and just be more open with loss and with grief. Because when I done the first one, it was all about just losing a parent, because that's where I was. And I didn't know if one person would listen or 10 people would listen. And then to do the second one, I wanted it to be just a bit more open. And Rachel's name that just kept coming up, and I wasn't really aware of the story. And then it was my sister's. And then I followed her and sent her a DM, and so strong. And it's just, it's so sad. It's sometimes it's just sad, you know. But I think for her, she finds a great release in social media and in Instagram. And I think that's her therapy. And that is what works for her.
And know? Also, like, not to ever judge someone. You know, like, I've seen, like, people getting hate for things like that. You know, for her turning to her camera. And she said, like, I find it easier to sit in my wardrobe and talk to my phone than actually tell my family how hurt I really am and how devastated I am.
But you can see that works for her.
Yeah.
You know? But people, when we interviewed Shannon Joyce, who was the big C on Instagram, and she got trolled, you know, and Shannon had cancer for the third time and, you know, had to get her eggs frozen, all of that. And people were sending her baby growers, and you're going, what is wrong with people?
It's crazy.
What is wrong with people? It's just, maybe it's 2020. Maybe 2020 is just making people go weird. But yeah, I've had some amazing people, and also people are trusting me with their stories.
But your mum must have been so proud of you, even the way you say that she called you son.
Yes.
Like, you can tell that that's pride.
Yeah. She was also very good at telling me to calm the fuck down. When, you know, my mum had me at 21. So she was quite a young mom, you know, young mom and seven children. And there's 10 months between me and my sister. So literally a pregnancy between us. So we were kind of like twins growing up. And then Valerie is 10 months later. So she was very, my mom, I can't, for anyone to do what she done on the budget she had with seven children, you know, we were never hungry. I had my own room. We had every toy we could have ever wanted at Christmas. You know, we all got Valentine's cards, you know, at Easter. I'm telling you, church, communions, confirmations, we wanted for nothing. And you almost go, how did one person do that?
Mm.
It's so strange.
It's amazing.
But she sacrificed herself, obviously, because my mother really had nothing, but in fact, she told us she had everything because she had us. She didn't have any friends. She didn't have any social life. We were her social life. We were everything. And when we succeeded, she succeeded. And she was very good at that. And she really was selfless, you know. And me and my sisters, me, even it's quite good now, I was listening back to stuff growing up. And when I was away in London, living there and doing all that, and, you know, Big Brother, my mom, Remember we were on the Late Late Show with Pat Kenny and I was the guest and I was going, how has this happened? And my mom was like, do not talk about me. Do not mention anything. And then, of course, I mentioned mom and they put the big boom over her head on the Late Late Show. She's like, oh, well, you know, Pat. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, she's talking to Pat Kenny. It was just, you know, surreal moments to have. And, you know, very luckily, they're all documented.
Yeah, that's
so it's great to have them. And we find videos of her, you know, complaining or giving out. And it's my mom had such an amazing spirit. My mom was very quick. She'd build you up, but she'd also cut you down. She'd cut a bitch. You know, and I think I take after a bit like I can cut a bitch too. You know, my mom would even just do it with a look.
Yeah.
You're like, shit, I'm in trouble here. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And do you think, obviously, she's around you every day and you've spoken about going down the adoption route or looking into surrogacy and different things that you're looking at. Do you feel ready that, you know, you're 42, this is the time?
Yeah, I think this is the time. And I feel like I'm back in kind of Ireland with my family because I believe to have a family, you need a support system around you. I'm one of seven. My six sisters, all my beautiful nieces and nephews, and they help each other. You know, my sister works as a hairdresser. So my sisters, one sister takes him here, another sister takes him there. And they know that she knows he's safe because he's loved, because he's with his aunts. You know, I take him places. So I think I'm going to need all my sisters around me to go, she won't shut up. It's 2 o'clock in the morning. Her nappy is green. What is going on? They're going, oh, that's fine. Just rub her back. You know,
yeah.
That, and my mom was very much like that. So I think in America, anything's possible. You know, so it was great when we're in America looking at surrogacy and talking to people about surrogacy. And we were on the adoption system there. And then I was like, well, you know, maybe the adoption system for us there isn't necessarily the way we're going to go. We're very much surrogacy. And then through Arthur's history and his, you know, life coming from Armenia and, you know, not really having anything and then having to seek asylum, you know, in Belgium and then the Salvation Army having to look after them. He's very much like, why are you paying all this money when you can adopt a child?
Yeah, it's a very selfless thing to do.
And do that. And that's where we're at now. We haven't necessarily ruled out surrogacy altogether. It's just that this is the door we're knocking on now. And to be honest with you, we've been reaching out here in Ireland. And I suppose with COVID's it's not making anything easy, you know. But from the last conversation we had, I just wasn't sure from the lady we spoke to what their feelings were on same-sex adoption. Because she was like, yeah. And I just thought, bitch, please. I was like, oh, you give me that phone right now and I will let her know who she's talking to. You know,
like you're hardly the first gay couple to have called.
Yes, 100%. But her whole tone changed. She went, oh, and I'm thinking, and I go to her, oh my God, what is wrong? And he's trying to get the phone away from me because he knows those conversations are recorded. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, have you any idea? You know, but we're still waiting for them to send us stuff, but we're not really getting any information. So we're just kind of doing it through our friend Alan, who adopted a little boy a few years ago. So we're kind of getting it through him and a social worker. He knows, you know, but 2020 is just the year that keeps on giving with everyone. It's just hurdle after hurdle. Surrogacy is just something our friends have gone through it. So I think there are options out there.
Yeah, there is. And we've started kind of the surrogacy conversations. And I think when you're actually picking up the phone and making these calls about adoption or surrogacy, it's so real. And there's so much to think
so
about
much,
and consider.
Yeah, and it's so strange with surrogacy because you can, even with women, it's whether you need a donor egg or it's going to be your own egg. And, you know, if it's your egg and then it's in someone else, and then it's almost like whose name goes on the birth cert. Like, yeah, it's so strange. So for us, say, for example, we were to take an egg from Cassie and say, you're going to carry our baby for us, right? For example, I said, if Cassie. It's €20. Right. So we take the egg from Cassie and say you carry it, you're our surrogate. But Cassie's name, no, your name would go on the birth cert.
Yes.
Even though you have no biological, you know, relationship, DNA relationship, because you're the lady that's giving birth to it. It's just, yeah. And then with Arthur and I, we necessarily may not want to find out who the dad is. Mm-hmm. But then a name has to go on the birth cert. Well, whose name do you put on it?
Yeah.
You know, because I think I like the idea of us not knowing. You know, because like we're going to love the baby no matter who the biological father is.
But do you think you'd be always guessing?
Yeah, but also I think Arthur and I would know. Like, listen, I'm going to break it down for you here. Look, because I'll tell you why. Arthur does not look Irish.
No.
He doesn't. All that black hair, mm-hmm. now it's yellow, when it was black. You know, Arthur is a very, you know, I always, he's got a big nose. He does, fact. I have a perfect button little nose that I've not had done. Can I point out, this is my own nose. So I think I'd be looking at our child going, she's got luscious hair. Oh my God, she's Arthur's. She's got a perfect nose. Look at those pouty lips. She's mine. You know? Oh, when the child has a personality. Oh, she's got a really dry sense of humour. Arthur's the dad. Look at that little look. She's definitely mine. You know? But I almost think when you have a child, you, that child's a reflection of the parents, whether they're biological or not, because 100%. They're seeing,
yeah,
what's going on, you know. But I think people would know. I think maybe they wouldn't. Because then you see some children that are adopted and you don't know them. They go, oh my God, they look just like you. And they're,
yes,
like, oh yeah. You know, because that happens.
Because mm-hmm. you kind of pick up little kind of idiosyncrasies from the people you live with, don't
how,
you?
How do you feel about the surrogacy thing? Are you excited about that for you? Or are you thinking, oh no?
I'm so ready to have another baby. Like, I look at, say, Jodie Wood. I don't know if you follow her. She just had a baby, and the little like baby noises, it's like, it's almost really hard for me to watch her stories because I'm like, I can almost
smell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm there.
Yeah.
And then I think about like this lady in another country, like with our baby, and oh, it's just a lot. But I've learned a lot from Rosanna Davison, actually.
Yes.
She gave me a lot of hope. She went to Ukraine. You know, I have a lot of faith in the system, especially since I started looking into it. But yeah, I'm just so ready now.
For us, though, some countries don't accept same sex. So some countries don't. You know, so for us, we are limited as well to where I think we can go.
Yes.
You know, I know in America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But like for the Ukraine, or I'm not sure Ukraine, and like, I'm sure in Russia we can't. And some of them even say they don't do same sex. You know, I just said to Arthur, Arthur's dated women before. And I said to him recently, look, this is the situation. We just need to hook you up with someone.
Yeah, would Pippa not do it?
Just,
for you?
I've asked. She's never clearly been drunk enough to say yes, but I'll have to come on, Pippa.
You got to work on it.
Come on. Yeah, I'm going to have to try.
Yeah.
But can you imagine a child with my DNA and her DNA? That'd be like something you see in Jurassic World. You know, this new breed of dinosaur. I'm not sure the world's ready for that just yet.
I don't know. I think it could be pretty special. Brian, thank you from the bottom of my heart for taking the time today to come on my podcast. I think you're such an amazing guy.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for asking me.
Thanks for listening to the Go Glow podcast, with thanks to Spotlight Oral Care. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to my podcast and leave a review. It would really mean a lot. And if you want to learn more about my story, you can follow me on Instagram at georgie.crawford or head over to my website, thegoglow.ie.